Okay, today's Mishnah in Masechet Ohalot is Perek Tet Zayin, Mishnah Beit. So the last thing that we learned about is how metaltalim that a particular person is carrying are able to be mevias atuma ba'ovi hamardea, but that's an interesting thing. It serves as an ohel, but only to the guy who's carrying it, because as we explained, Rabbi Akiva explained, the case isn't really serving as an ohel, and so on, right? Now, let's talk about, says the Mishnah, let's talk about the difference between becoming Tamei itself or bringing Tumah to something else. So let's imagine a case we've got a pencil that's stuck in the wall, in a hole in the wall. Kush. Kush, of course, is not a pencil, but it's that spindle for spinning, which we've spoken about a lot in Kalim. So you've got a kush, and it's stuck into a little hole in the wall, and it has a chatzi zayit of a mace, which is mitachtav, but it's got another chatzi zayit of a mate on top of it. Now, both of these chatzi zesim are essentially radiating tuma onto this pencil. So afapish einan mechuvanim, so it's not as if the radiation meets in the middle somewhere. One piece, chatzi zayis, could be around the eraser, and the other piece is above it, is towards the point of the pencil. So they're not mechuvanim. Afal piking, both of them become tamei. And that means that the kush is able to act as an ohel, to be mitzarefit, as if it were a real ohel. So even though each ohel, so each part, only has a chatzi zayis, the same way that we said before, which was the machlokas that we had back at Paragimo, but the same way we said before, according to the Chachomim, that you can be mitzarei for chatzi zayis in one ohel, and this is chatzi zayis another place in the ohel, we treat this as if it is an ohel to make a kezayis. But that means only for itself, obviously. It's meviyat atumala atzmo. And that's what we meant in the first Mishnah. You can bring tuma to yourself even if you do not have a size of anything. Bechol shohu. In this case, it's even less than the size that we had over there of Ovi Mardea, which has a circumference of a tefach. Now, the other halacha, which is that you need a tefach, let's imagine a case like this. You've got a kadar. A kadar is a guy who's selling pots. He's walking along. Now, what they would usually do is they would hang a bunch of different pots from a long pole they would carry behind them, which was called a salah, not a sal, but maybe it's the wrong girsa, or it's not clear to me what the sal. It should be a sal, not sal. So whatever, but we're calling it a basket. It's not a basket. It's a pole of some kind. Now he goes over a kever, and one end of this asal is over the kever, and it's not a tefach. The din is that a kelim shebitzad hasheni tahor. Anything that is less than a tefach cannot be mevi tuma on the kelim that are underneath it. And that's the din all over, even if it's being carried, and even if the asal itself is tameh, they are not going to be mekabel tuma because they are kadar. A kadar makes things out of cheres. Cheres is not going to be mekabel tuma by touching on its handle, by touching the asal. So that's not a problem. If, however, it is a poteach tefach, so then, of course, everything underneath it would be tummy, because in that case it was maybe, assuming that the pots are open, it was maybe tuma to all of the pots, which are now going to be inside. If they don't have a tummy pasil, then they're going to become tummy. Now, we're gonna change our focus for a strange reason. In the middle of a Mishnah, we're changing our focus completely to a different set of dinim that is going to be our issue henceforth. So we started talking about the question of these gezeros that we made about measuring things that you're carrying in terms of how there may be tuma to you or how there may be tuma to other things. there are also cases where we have a question of whether we should be gozer tuma because of a chashash that there may be kvarim here. So let us start with tluliot. Tluliot are these mounds. They're generally made for agricultural purposes as mechitzas in fields and so on, but they're artificial mounds usually, and they may be close to a city, and the city normally would have a cemetery, or they may be close to a road, which normally can lead you to the cemetery. So then the halacha would be that whether these are new, and we'll see what defines new in a moment, echad chadashot ve'echad yishanot are tmeot. If they're near the city, then we are afraid that there are cases where people are going to bury, let us say a woman has a miscarriage, doesn't want to make a big deal out of it, make a whole thing in the Beis HaKvaros and so on. So she goes out on her own and she buries this miscarriage, which is going to be able to be metame once it's already passed Arboim. And so the reason that she puts it on a tlulit is because a tlulit people don't walk on. So she doesn't want to spread tumah. So she goes ahead and she buries in this tlulit. So if it's close to a city or it's close to the road, so over there, she's ready to bury it there because it's not as if she's introducing tumah into a place where there's no tumah at all. Everybody understands that this road is the road to the cemetery or it's next to the city, which anyway, people are always coming out to the cemetery. And in that case, we have to be choshesh. Now, what would be the problem of being bedavka near the road? So first of all, a woman is not going to go out on her own that we wouldn't know. And secondly, if it's near a road, it could certainly have happened that we were trying to bury a mace. It's late on Erev Shabbos. They need to make the kfura before Shabbos. So what they did was when they realized they weren't going to make it. Now, here we're talking about where we don't have the chashash of a woman because it's not a place where she would have gone out alone, but it's just a road that is going on the derech to a Beit HaKvarot. This is the highway to a Beit HaKvarot that is not nearby. So over there, we'd have to be worried that maybe people were in a desperate state and they buried a mate even there. So if harachokot, if it's far away from the city or the road, so then if it's chadashot, which again, we haven't yet defined, if it's chadashot, then it's torot. Why? Because nobody is going to be going out. No woman is going to be going out there alone, and nobody is going to attempt a kvura, which is a long-distance kvura on an Erev Shabbos, and therefore we don't have to be choshesh. So we don't have any problem. But if it's an old tlulit, then that means that since we do not have any archaeological evidence because Reb Barnea didn't live in the neighborhood, we are always choshesh that this might have been, you never know, this might have been a road that was close to a Beis HaKvaros once upon a time. Or it might have been a road that was close to a town once upon a time. You shouldn't be doing this to us, Gavi. I mean, there's a limit to what we can take. Yes, indeed. My gosh. So in that case, we don't know. And if we don't know, we have to worry even if we think it's not near a city. Okay, so then that already gives us our definitions. So how do we define? In terms of krova, that we can give you a definition of what is a standard, how far a person will take risk. If she's a woman, if going out alone to bury, that would be 50 amot. And people will risk 50 amot if it's Erev Shabbos and they're worried about getting to the Beis HaKvaros in time. But if it's more than that, so then we don't have any choshesh. That's considered to be rechoka. How do you define something that's old? Something that's old is 60 years. If it's 60 years, then it might have been forgotten by that time. Divrei Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Yehuda says, well, it isn't defined by some particular amount of time or some particular space. It's basically, when we say close, it means it's the closest place to the city, and therefore it's the closest place she can reach. That's what it means. So krova means krova she'in krova mimena. There's nothing closer. Yishana simply means that it's so old that you can't find anybody in the area who remembers when it was originally made. So because of that, if they remember when it was originally made, and we ask them, okay, well, when it was made, was there a road nearby? Was there a city nearby? So then we would assume that if they remember the Tulit, they would remember whether there was a city or a road. The Tanakama, Rebbe Meir in this case, holds that, look, you know, a kid may remember that they used to sled down in the snow on this Tulit, but he doesn't necessarily remember how close it was to a city that used to be in the area and so on. So that would not be much of a riot. Therefore, Rebbe Meir gives it a certain amount of time where we could generally still find out about things. Moving on to Mishnah Gimel. Now we have a serious problem, and this is a problem that comes up all the time nowadays and leads to tremendous problems, and that is the discovery of an ancient burial site or discovery of bodies where, again, in Eretz Yisrael, obviously, it creates these problems. So where you discover bodies that are buried, and the question is, are they part of a Beit HaKvarot or a Chatzar HaKever that we spoke about earlier, in which case it's absolutely prohibited to move them because a mace is kono mikomo, or are they here illegally? And because of that, we would have a right to move them for housing development and so on. So this would be the question. Generally, if you go ahead and you bury someone in a place that was meant to be the permanent mokum of kvura, so then the mace is kono mikomo. But remember that it was common before there were ways of transporting a mace. It was common to bury a mace temporarily in one area, wait until the body decomposes, and then it would be possible to bring the remains to a family plot, and that would be standard to do. Now, it's certainly possible that the original kfura was done over here for that purpose, and bedavka was made out tonight to move the mace, in which case the mace was not kene, and then whatever happened, political fortunes changed, the family couldn't afford to come, whatever it was, they were unable to go ahead and to rebury the remains, right? So if it's a Beis HaKvaros, then obviously we assume that Beis HaKvaros is a permanent thing. If, however, it's not in a Beit HaKvaros, then we assume, why is somebody buried in the middle of nowhere? It must be that they were going to move it away. So that would not be sure. What would be the din? Says the Gemara, let's say somebody is digging foundations for housing development, and he finds a mace, a motse mate, and it's the first time that a mate was found in this area where he's starting to dig. So then it depends. If he's mushkaf kidarko, if he's lying in the way that the minhag was to bury the mate, so then we can assume that it was a Jewish burial. Now, Jewish burial at the time of Chazal was buried with the mate on his back and his hands folded over his chest, which we don't do anymore. That's not the minhag now. The minhag is to bury a mace with the hands at the side, as if he's like flat out. But in those days, if you find him like a Jew, not lo et fusato, so then you're allowed to take it because you can assume there's nothing else here that he was buried in order to be moved. So you take the body together with tfusato. Tfusato is the area underneath it, which is the area that there may have been. This is the shear of shalosh etzbaot. And the shalosh etzbaot is a shear that you, any fluids, liquids that might have come from the body were all absorbed there. The K was absorbed there. And you have to dig that up together with the body and rebury it somewhere else. So we have no reason for assuming that this is a Beit HaKvaros. How about if you find another body? Matsa shnayim, same thing. If you only have two bodies, it's also mutter for you to assume this was not a Beit HaKvarot. Therefore, you could take the bodies together with the tvusa and move them because we have no basis to suggest that we are in a Beit HaKvarot. The problem starts where you find three bodies. So what we spoke about over here was the question of if you end up finding three bodies, if you end up one, two, so we said you move the body together with the tfusa, which is the karka underneath that might have absorbed body fluids and so on. And, but once it's three, so then that means that these are permanent burials. The halacha is that a mace is konu mikomo if he was legally buried. You're not allowed to move him. So once there's three, now you have to wonder whether this might actually be a Beit HaKvarot. Now, remember that the standard for burial over there was to have these burial caves, and that you had the burial cave, which was 4 by 6 amot, and then you had these various kuchen on either two sides or all four sides, depending on how extensive this was and how long there might have been one backed up to another one. It could have been quite a big area, which is why you need to check on a diagonal from one end to the other. So bodek mimenu la'alan, once you find three, and the idea over there of the three is that they are buried in a correct fashion, which means that you have an ama between each one of the remains. So then, im yesh bein ze lezemi arba amot ad shmona, because we're not sure, like whether this is two bodies that are buried on one side, two bodies that are buried across from each other or on diagonal. So as long as it's within 8 or 4, so then we would know that the difference is talking about the difference between the first body that you found and the last body that you found. You have to be assuming that this is a kosher shunat kvarot. You're not allowed to move them just because you've got a building permit in the area. And once we need to think that you found a shunat kvarot, that means you found a cave, so then you have to make sure that there are not other adjacent caves, because very often you have, as I said, you have that opening, that space, that chotzer, the 4 by 6, and then you've got the caves in all kinds of directions. So because of that, you've got to check for even the diagonal of a cave in the other way, which would mean that would be 20 amos, because what you really have is 18 amos, one across from the other would be the maximum distance. But since you might be talking about a body in Kuch A on one end and Kuch C on the other end, you have to take a look at the diagonal to make sure that there's no one buried there. And that would be the diagonal of 18. It brings you to our standard diagonal, which brings you to 20. So, matzachai besof esrim ama. So then you have to assume, oh my gosh, this is an extension of the original chatzar of kvarot. Okay, so now I have to be bodeg again. Maybe there's another chatzar kever in this direction as well. So now you have to go another 20 amos to make sure that you hit the entire diagonal. Why? Normally we don't say that you need to do that kind of thing, but once you've established, it's called raglayim ledover, once you established that there's a strong chashash, because you found three bodies that were arranged properly, then you have to make certain that you do not have a violation here with your building permit of an ancient chatzar kvaros. She'ilu mitchila mitzo'o, if you had only found this body that you find now, after checking 20 amos on a diagonal, you wouldn't be mechuyev to worry about it. All you would need to do is you would move the body together with the tfusa, together with the earth that's with it, and we would have no reason to assume that that was a permanent burial. Remember, as we've said many times, the standard was, because of the lack of refrigeration and transport, standard was that if somebody died, there wasn't much choice but to bury him wherever he died. Then it would be possible, after a year, they would take the remains and bring the body to a family plot, bring the bones to a family plot, and therefore we wouldn't have to worry about it. But here, since it's raglayim ledover, we do have to worry about it.